Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, February 16th, 2026. Looking for an MBA experience where you're truly seen, supported, and inspired to grow? At Vanderbilt Business, you'll discover a personalized learning environment that elevates your potential and turns ambition into action. Whether you're switching careers or accelerating your current path, the Vanderbilt MBA offers a customizable curriculum, exceptional outcomes, and a community committed to your success. Propel your future with a program invested in who you are and who you're becoming. Vanderbilt is waiving their $200 application fee for MBA Wiretaps listeners. To learn more about the Vanderbilt MBA program and to claim your application fee waiver, visit business.vanderbilt.edu/clearadmit. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Alex, how are things going?
Very good. Thank you, Graham.
So this week, we've got a lot of stuff. We've got Real Humans of Harvard Business School. So we'll talk about some students there. We have a really nice military to MBA story, loads of interview tips, and some pretty exciting news about forthcoming events that we'll get into. But first up, this is kind of a big week, right? Aren't there some more kind of interview things on the horizon for round two candidates?
Yeah, I mean, Wharton's scheduled to release its interview invites for its odd team-based interview experience, I suppose. And INSEAD also is going to release some interview invites. But I also speculate that Sloan will do so too. They don't publish ahead of time when they release their interview invites. But I think timing-wise, it looks like it'll be this upcoming week. Unless, of course, they did release them last Thursday or Friday, because we're recording this Thursday morning.
Yeah, good point.
But yeah, and there's lots of activity on Livewire currently, lots of interview invites either trickling out or being rolled out. So we are in the depths of the interview season.
Yeah, exciting stuff. I do want to remind everyone, if you are interviewing, please send us an interview report. You can just go onto the website and share what your interview was like. That's the sort of life's blood that helps our, you know, kind of interview archive run and gives you, the candidate, great insights when you're trying to interview at a school. So please pay that forward.
And it also trains our interview simulator.
Yeah, which has been going gangbusters.
Yeah.
Do you want to share anything about that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I can't look at, there's no proprietary data there revealing anything, but I can say that we've seen now 150 interviews simulated through the interview simulator. And I just think that's a good number. Mm-hmm. We rolled it out as a beta for around two folks to trial and test. We think it's in great shape. So hopefully it's really, really useful for those folks.
Yeah.
But we are seeing really good traction right now.
Yeah, definitely. It's been really picking up. So it's kind of exciting. We have a ton of events going on. So actually later today, Monday, February 16th at noon Eastern, you and I are going to get together and do our monthly Ask Me Anything live stream over on YouTube. So join us there. We also have, it's just a busy week. We've got on Wednesday, we're doing a special webinar about LBS's one-year accelerated MBA. That's a newer program. They have the first cohort there this year. So this application cycle is just the second for that program. On Thursday, we're doing a whole thing with Vanderbilt Owen about careers outside of consulting. So it's sort of like, if you're not going to do consulting, which is, you know, what a lot of people kind of list on their to-do thing, what are the things do people do? So it's a whole webinar that we're going to do about that. That's on Thursday. All these things are at noon Eastern. And then, you know, next week we've got Masters in Management events with a whole bunch of great schools on both the 24th and 25th. Our colleague Mike is going to MC those because I'm actually slipping away for a few days of vacation. And then I am so excited, Alex. This is what I was alluding to at the top of the show. On March 19th, which is a Thursday, at 10 a.m. Eastern, we're going to get together with 14 top MBA programs. We're doing a series of three panels, and this event is called Designed for the World: The Global Advantage of a U.S. MBA. So this is an event that's specifically for international students, so non-U.S. folks who are thinking about the U.S. as a destination. And I'm really excited. I mean, we've got, you know, Stanford, Duke, Columbia. I mean, the list is long, but it's really, you know, 14 of the top programs in the U.S. And we're going to have a panel about, you know, the importance of kind of the international voices in a classroom. We're going to have a panel about student visas and that process of like moving to the US. And we're going to have a panel about career outcomes as well. And we have an amazing array of guests from, you know, there's an immigration lawyer that's going to join us. They're head of career services at different schools. We've got current students. We've got admissions directors, obviously. So I cannot wait for this. And we just launched a kind of landing page so you can sign up. You know, just go to clearadmit.com/events and you can find all of our events. But I'm excited about that.
I think it's going to be an absolutely fantastic event and really, really insightful, because there is a lot of mystery and a lot of sort of, I don't know, misinformation in terms of the realities for international students coming to the United States. So, I really hope these panel discussions and this overall event helps put the line in the sand and really sort of dispels myths and provides the real current reality of the opportunities for these international students coming to the United States.
Yeah, that's the aim. Can't wait for that. And then this is a ways off, but I'm very excited. We also just launched a landing page for this. We're going to do our annual in-person event. So this is the only kind of in-person thing that we do every year. It's an MBA fair. We're doing it on May 11th, and it's going to be in Atlanta. And this is just a, you know, kind of a prospective student fair. And I can tell you already that Harvard, Stanford, Wharton, Chicago, Kellogg, others, there's a long list of schools that are joining us for that. So very exciting. And that's going to be hosted at Georgia Tech Scheller, which is in kind of Midtown Atlanta. Great location, beautiful building. So I'm very excited about that. We do this once a year. And I know now it's become like a thing where some of our, you know, some of our prospective candidates that tune in and are thinking about business school will actually travel to this event, because it's the one event that has all the schools in one place, which you rarely see these days.
Yeah, and this is our third of these events, right?
Yeah, we did Chicago, then last year was in Boston, and this year we're in Atlanta. So it should be fun.
Very good.
Yeah, so stay tuned for more info on that. The other thing that I wanted to mention is that over on the website, we've been, you know, continuing to just publish lots of great content, but we did this really nice story about a kind of veteran's journey to Mendoza, the business school at Notre Dame. And, you know, it's just an interesting story about this guy who was in the Army for about 10 years and then pivoted out into business school. And he writes a really nice, nice piece. These are always Fridays from the Frontline pieces that we do are always kind of firsthand. So it's written by this current student at Notre Dame. So good stuff there. If you're military or just curious to read a kind of heartwarming story, there's some great photos too of him and his kids and wife and stuff. It's really pretty touching piece. We also, Alex, ran some admissions tips. They're all about interviewing, because that's what's on everyone's mind right now. So we did a kind of interview etiquette 101, which covers things like what to wear and what to do and, you know, how to kind of handle some of the basics. But then we also did tips on what questions you can ask an interviewer, because there is almost always going to be that moment at the end of an interview where they say, do you have any questions for me? And I can just tell you, it's a bad idea to say, no, I don't. You should have something. And so this helps you to think through how to tailor that. And we also had another tip about what to do after your interview, which is, you know, thank you notes, all that good stuff, what happens afterwards. So a lot of good stuff up on the site.
Very good.
We also did a Real Humans piece where we caught up with Harvard Business School students. And I want to just share the profile of one of them in particular. I think there are five or six that we talked to for this article, but I wanted to share the story of Richard, who's 27 and hails from Munich, Germany. And he, you know, had studied at the Frankfurt School of Finance and Management as an undergrad. And before coming to Harvard, he spent several years playing professional basketball as a co-captain for the Frankfurt Skyliners, which is the basketball team in Frankfurt. As you know, basketball has kind of had a really big kind of, I wouldn't say renaissance, I would say naissance, or, you know, kind of, I don't even know what the word is here, but it's become popular, let's just put it that, in Europe. And so it's not just the US anymore. People are really into basketball over here in Europe too. And so he played professional basketball until 2022, when he suffered a career-ending injury. And he pivoted into working as an analyst in private equity after that for a year or two. And now he's at HBS. And so I always love these questions. We ask them, we asked Richard, like, why did you choose HBS? And so he said, HBS has great faculty in the areas that I'm interested in. The business of sports, investing, and family business are all very prominent at HBS. However, What convinced me was that every person I met before applying that was affiliated with HBS was amazing. And when I visited campus, the environment felt extremely electric compared to other business schools I visited. The people were the main factor in that decision. So that was just kind of interesting. I know people often say, oh, you go to HBS because it's, you know, ranked at the top often or whatever. But it was just nice to hear, you know, his personal kind of story there.
No, absolutely fantastic. And yeah, anyone that has an offer at HBS, it's got to be super, super tempting, obviously. But to hear that sort of how it resonated is really, really, I mean, it's good to hear, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Because sometimes I think the criticism you would get would be people, oh, they just go to a school that's high ranked and they're not doing their due diligence. But here's someone who's, you know, arguably going to one of the best schools in the world. And he's, you know, did his due diligence and he had a real fit, you know, and we're going to talk later on this show about someone who's been accepted at a couple of top schools and is, you know, they're trying to decide and it's going to maybe come down to a sort of question around fit. So we'll talk about that later. Otherwise, though, Alex, I don't have too much. We're going to get into the candidates, but I did want to mention we continue to roll out some bonus episodes of the show. People have probably seen, you know, there was an episode I did with a marketing professor at Indiana Kelly that was a lot of fun. I also sat down with the dean, associate dean at Georgetown McDonough, and we talked about the new curriculum there. So that episode's now available and in your feed here, wherever you're listening. And I will say, coming up, I've got a great conversation that I had with the dean at SMU Cox, all about Texas and Dallas and their program. He's been there for about 8 months now, and it was just a really fun conversation. And we're also going to have an episode about financing the MBA with our friends over at Juno. So there's a lot of kind of bonus episodes coming your way. Stay tuned for those. You can always write to Alex and I at info@clearadmit.com. Use the subject line wiretaps. But Alex, anything else from you before we talk candidates today?
I thought you were going to mention that the Financial Times ranking is coming out today.
Oh, yes. Sorry. Yeah. Yes. Well, we don't have an advanced copy of it, but it is coming out today. And so that means we get to complain on the next episode about how much we think the ranking is wrong or whatever. We always tend to, you know, we can always find fault in most of these rankings because they're, you know, just sort of...
I'll put you on the spot, Graham. Who's going to be the top three?
Oh, geez. Boy, you really are putting me on the spot here. You know, it's funny. I'm going to cheat and look up at least what it was last year. Cause I mean, I don't have a memory bank of like what, what they did last year, but I think, so first of all, the thing that I've noticed with this ranking over time is that it has been skewing less and less US. And I don't know if I'm not sure what's going on there, but it used to be that, you know, almost all the top 20 programs on this ranking were American, and that's really been shifting. And so I just looked at last year's here. So last year, the top three were Wharton, Columbia, and ESA. Those were the top three. And, you know, there was a tie at number four with Bocconi and INSEAD. So you see what I'm talking about? All these European schools have been flooding into the mix here. I think Wharton will hold at the top. I'm just going to say that I think that INSEAD's going to bump up a little bit here. And maybe unseat one of those others in Columbia or ESA. I would argue that it'll be some mix of Wharton, INSEAD, and maybe Columbia at the top three.
Very good.
What are you thinking? Have you thought about this yet?
I haven't given it one iota of thought. I just wanted to put you on the spot.
Yeah. It is tricky. I mean, it's such an interesting ranking just because of the way that they, you know, it's very focused on there's a lot of sort of post MBA salary, but then they've added in all these things about sustainability and carbon footprint and equity and things like that. And I think that's where the US schools have been fading a bit because they're not allowed to track some of those things. Yeah, so it's really challenging. Yeah. But anyway, we'll see how it turns out. But yeah, stay tuned. We will definitely break down that ranking next week in our regular episode. So stay tuned for that.
Let's kick on.
All right, let's talk our candidates. So this is Wiretap's candidate number one. So our first candidate this week has six schools on the target list, and those schools are Berkeley, Chicago Booth, Harvard, Wharton, Stanford, and UCLA. This person's been working in wealth management, although mostly via a series of internships, because this candidate is actually a deferred MBA candidate. So they're currently probably a senior at university, and they're going to be applying, I guess, this spring or something, right? So they would love to work in finance, asset management, or potentially consulting after business school. They have a 4.0 GPA, a perfect 4.0. That was earned via a couple years in community college and then a transition into one of the top two public universities in California, where they're finishing out their degree, again, with that 4.0. They're located in LA. They would love to be in the Bay Area or potentially New York after business school. Now, they did say, they had some really kind words, and this must be why you picked them, Alex, because they said that they wanted to post their deferred MBA, kind of applyware entry here after binging the Clear Admit podcast. And they said they loved the show and they wanted to thank us for providing valuable anecdotal advice for the world's aspiring MBA students. So we thank them for listening. Some other kind of factors here. So this person has, I guess, done a lot of volunteer work, they point out. They've been even since, from the beginning of high school. They've been doing kind of volunteer work. They work at a local senior center that has like over 100 different volunteers. And they, provide sort of caregiving services for senior citizens in their community. They've had three different wealth management internships as part of their kind of undergraduate experience. And that seems like an area that they're interested in. And they actually have an offer post-graduation during their deferment period to work at one of these firms. They're quite interested in social enterprise. They actually founded a social enterprise entity that has received over $200,000 in pre-seed angel investment funding. And so they're having, kind of doing that in parallel. And I think they want to continue to kind of work on that. And I'm trying to think of what else. There was a lot here. They gave us a ton of information. I know one key thing, I mentioned the 4.0 GPA. Well, they haven't yet taken a test. They do plan to take the GMAT Focus at the end of this month, and they're hoping to hit somewhere around the median score for the M7, which is like 685 plus. They really want to crush the quantitative component of the GMAT just to make sure they can assure the committee they're really strong in that domain. And they're wondering, the big question they had is, are they aiming too high, with this list of schools, which is essentially Harvard, Stanford, Wharton, Booth, Berkeley, and UCLA. So what do you think, Alex?
You should aim high. I don't think there's any real risk to doing that, because as a deferred candidate, if they're not successful, they can reapply in 3 years' time or whenever it is. That's more, the time they're actually going to attend the schools and reapply to these programs and potentially widen their net if they need to. That said, if they come back with a really strong GMAT score relative to the medians of these programs, what's not to like about this candidate? I mean, they've gone the community college route to a top university with a 4.0 GPA. They've had to work during their studies. They're also very active in student organizations on campus. They're also active, as you said, outside of campus, volunteering. They've even founded a social enterprise initiative that got funding, and they've got these internships. Now, obviously, if they can show that they've done well in the internships, get recommendations that support that and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
It just seems to me they hit every marker that an ADCOM will look for in a deferred candidate.
Agreed.
Potentially with the possible exception of what's their plan and so forth. So as long as that's tightened, which the plan seems fine, but I haven't really focused so much on that. But everything that they've done, in my mind, Graham, hits the marker. So they need to just aim high,
yeah,
and see where the chips fall and really, really prep hard for that GMAT.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the linchpin, is like if they can do well on the test, that will really help. It's funny, we talked so much about all these exciting future events that Clear Admit has on deck that I didn't mention that we just finished a series of events around deferred enrollment. And one of the things that the admissions officers said on those panels over and over again was, there is no risk to applying now and then having to come back if you don't get in and apply later. There's no stigma attached to it. So this idea of aiming high makes absolute sense in my view. Why not? There's no such thing as aiming too high, when it comes to deferred enrollment, because you might as well. There's no risk. It's kind of an easy moment. And in fact, many of these schools don't even charge an application fee. So it's sort of low risk to apply. So I think they should aim high. I do think they should try to have as high of a GMAT score as possible. And yeah, I mean, this is, a really interesting profile. I agree, assuming they can, speak to their goals in an effective way. but everything really does seem to line up. And they've had a pretty impressive, interesting set of experiences, like you mentioned, you know, working their way through community college and then into a great university to finish out. So yeah, there's a ton to like here.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So I want to thank them for binging this podcast. Hopefully they'll continue to listen as they travel through the application process and maybe keep us posted as to how it all turns out. But let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number 2. So our second candidate this week has 5 schools on the target list, and those schools are Berkeley, Duke, LBS, UCLA, and UVA Darden. This person's looking to start in the fall, and I believe, if memory serves, they submitted applications back in the second round and are kind of awaiting word. So they've been working in venture capital pre-MBA, and they're thinking about something in finance or VC after business school as well. They have a GRE score of 340. I don't think I've ever seen one of those. That's a perfect score, essentially. And they have a GPA of what they list as 3.1, but they later told us they're from India and that they scored, I think, 5.5 out of 7. So it's a different scale. And I'm not so sure that 3.1, you know, is like a 3.1 in the U.S. or something. So we would want to keep that in mind. They have 8 years of work experience. They're located in Mumbai in India, and they are 29 years old. They mentioned that they're an overrepresented male, it seems like. They have 4 years of experience doing big 4 M&A before the more recent work in the sort of venture capital, or it's really domestic venture debt fund that they've been working with. So, that's kind of the basics. They have some activities and things. I think you asked them some questions about this stuff, but what do you make of this candidate? Because, you know, they've applied and we're kind of waiting to hear what's going to happen. But what do you make of them? Because they are overrepresented and a bit older.
Yeah, so those two statements you made right at the end are the challenges. They, as they've sort of confessed, they are overrepresented and they're a little bit older. So those are the hurdles they've got to overcome. So they've got to be able to sort of really show that despite being overrepresented, they'll bring a unique voice to the classroom, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm quite impressed with their work experience, quite frankly, Graham. Mm-hmm. So I think that will help them overcome that hurdle to some degree. They've also sort of dabbled in consumer startups outside of their direct responsibilities. It looks like they have quite decent volunteer experiences and so forth. I would have been more sort of positive if they come in round 1 versus round 2. So there's always that additional challenge in round 2 that, you know, for overrepresented candidates, there's some of these seats have been filled, et cetera, et cetera. So be that as it may, I know they've already got an interview invite at ESC. So hopefully they've seen some more interview invites at this point. But I mean, that GRE score is absolutely outstanding. Their work experience looks really very, very solid, if not very strong. Mm-hmm. As you say, even though they self-report a 3.1 GPA, I'm sure that's not relative to a 3.1 in the US.
Yeah.
And one reason why I'm convinced of that is, again, they once they finish their undergraduate, they've gone off into a pretty impressive finance career. So you don't typically do that from a poor undergraduate launch pad. So I think there's a lot to like here. I just want to make sure that they've done enough to make themselves somewhat differentiated from that crowd of overrepresented, I do wish them the best of luck. There's not really much advice we can provide because they have already applied.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I think, you know, they're probably looking for some maybe reassurance about their their odds or something. I don't know, but I will say, I was taken by, you know, one of the things they talked about doing kind of volunteer-wise is since COVID or maybe even before, they've been working with an entity that called Clean Shores, which, cleans up the beaches in Mumbai, and they do these kind of cleanup drives and awareness campaigns. So that was nice to read about. And I think, you know, while they are overrepresented, I will say, you know, they have a finance background, so it's not like they're a software engineer or an engineer, period. So that's a little different when we talk about the Indian kind of pool. But yeah, and super test score, et cetera. So my hope is that, yeah, they come across as being academically very sound with pretty interesting work experience. And I mean, they as you say, very impressive, some of the things they've done and on the side as well as their main career. So yeah, I you know, obviously they only have heard so far from ESA, you said, which oddly was not, that wasn't one of the ones on the list. I guess they just listed the US schools or something. And I guess they're waiting.
Well, they listed London Business School. I don't know where I got that information from.
Because they said it in the comment. Yeah, they just didn't list ESA as one of the ones they'd applied to. But then in the comments, they mentioned it. So they must have just. But in any event, they, and I guess by now they maybe have heard from LBS and Duke. So we'll see what happens. But I'm hoping that, that they get some good news. And yeah, appreciate them sharing their profile. It's hard to be overrepresented. And obviously it's ideal to be in the first round when you are. But hopefully some good news awaits them.
Yeah. And I would wonder what sort of drove their target list. It's geographically quite dispersed. Potentially, it's because their intention is to return to India post-MBA, which I think is very noble. But I don't think they've reached with this target list, right? I mean, they've got sort of top 16 US programs, top 10, top 16, as well as these European programs. So they haven't really shot for the moon with M7. So hopefully that will help them.
Yeah. And I will say, with the way things are right now in the US with kind of application volume, international candidates, we've been hearing some stories about international candidates applying a bit less to the US. So that might be a good year. So, for someone who's international. So we'll see how it turns out for them. I want to thank them for the kind words about the feedback you provided, Alex, and also just for sharing their profile. Let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number 3.
This might be the shortest show in our history, Graham. So
I don't know. So this is a decision wire entry that you picked, Alex, as you've been doing these last handful of weeks. And this person, they applied to Sloan at MIT and they applied to Wharton at Penn, and they were admitted to both programs. And in fact, they got a little money, not a little money, a lot of money at MIT. They got $100,000. Wharton did not offer them a scholarship. Their GMAT score was a 760. That's the old format of the exam, and a very high score, above the average at all these schools. They had a 3.8 undergraduate GPA, which also would have been very competitive. They mentioned they're coming from consulting and that they're interested in MBB in the USA because they're an international student. They are drawn to Sloan for its culture and proximity to analytics, AI, and tech. But they connected well with Wharton people and the curriculum. They then go on to say, money at MIT is nice, but I can do either program debt-free. Any input or advice is welcome. So yeah, what do you make of this, Alex? Where should they go? I mean, $100,000 at Sloan is nothing to sneeze at. So yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it does sort of depend on their resources, and they say that they can do either program debt-free. So if that truly is the case, then I would make a strong argument for Wharton being in the tier above, being sort of providing a little bit more access to MBB, stronger network in MBB, stronger networks, period, larger program, more resources, etc. I mean, Sloan is an extremely strong program, don't get me wrong, and its affiliation with MIT is obviously going to be super helpful. But as they express the proximity to analytics, AI, and tech, I think you're going to get all of that and more at Wharton. Also, I'm not saying Wharton's necessarily better than Sloan in this regard, but I certainly think it competes in this regard, and so forth. So I would bet on Wharton here, Graham.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm kind of on the fence. So the one thing that did strike me is that they said they connected really well with Wharton people and the curriculum. So there's a fit question.
Yeah.
And, if they hold money aside because they're saying they can graduate debt-free, they don't really care about the money, it seems, then, you would argue these are two great programs. Go with where you fit best. It is 2 years of your life. I would also argue that it would be super helpful to know a couple of things. One, What are they hoping to do after consulting?
Yeah.
Because that might shape things a bit. You know, if there's something specific that they want to do, if it's, you know, real estate, or, I mean, I don't know, it could be something where you say, wow, one of these schools has a real edge in terms of alumni network in that specific domain.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I was thinking about is, where are they from and what's the reputation of these institutions in their home market if they ever intend to go back? Because there are some markets where, you know, the kind of engineering and tech reputation of an MIT Sloan could be very valuable depending on what they want to do with their long-term goals. But again, I do hear you loud and clear that, you know, Wharton is generally regarded as being a step ahead and, you know, kind of bigger network, more global network overall, in terms of the MBA population and just the size of it. So yeah, this is a tough call, but hopefully we've muddied the waters for them further.
Yes.
But it's tricky. Yeah. All right. So Alex, I want to thank you as always for picking out three really interesting candidates to discuss. And next week, we'll have to come back with some really important thoughts on the FT ranking once it's out. So we'll keep everybody tuned in for that.
Yeah, very good, Avril. Stay safe. Take care.